Tom, it's obviously something that most of us have never seen in our lifetime. You know, people remember Muhammad Ali, you know, from generations ago. But, you know, this is not anything that's, that people have seen. It definitely will grab the attention of people positively or negatively.
Yeah, I mean, this is something. I mean, the stuff that everyone's gone through in the last few months, and then the Black Lives Movement and Matter Movement has been significant, and you know, an awakening, Greg's. And listening to you talk, there's going to be varying opinions. It is bold what the NBA has done. I've been glued to the TV trying to process all of this. Kenny Smith walking off the set on TNT. Saying his piece, and it leaves a lot of people kind of like speechless, and everybody's got to kind of take it in their own way. I understand the NBA making that decision and postponing the games and the teams not wanting to go out. I also understand the National Hockey League saying, okay, the teams and players can do their own thing in terms of protest, and that's fine. I respect that. It's all very fluid, you know, that cliche that's used in news terms right now, and you know, there's games that are supposed to be going on. So, you know, you're not going to please everybody, Greg's. This is every minute is different, and it's I'm just glued to it. I don't know. I think it's profound, and I'm still trying to figure out how to process all of it, but clearly, you know, something's got to change, and it's a situation down in the United States, and you know, it always leaks into Canada and makes us reflect on things as well, and sports is an escape. But I really admire the players for making a stand and what they want to believe in and how they believe in it, and kudos to them. Let's see how this goes. But you're right, you know, differing opinions, different ways, and people process things differently. So this is very, very fresh.
Tommy, I don't know if you got to see the Islanders Flyers, but the 3-0 lead reared its ugly head again. Maybe the saying the 3-0 lead is the worst lead in hockey is actually true in this year's playoffs. The Flyers got off to a great start. They chased Varlamov. They're up 3-0 in the first, but then the Islanders claw the way back. Now, they didn't win. They lost in overtime, but it's kind of amazing to me how, you know, this year and in other years, like that 3-0 lead seems to be, you know, and I know it's somewhat of a joke, but man, it sure comes to fruition a lot more than we think.
I mean, even the review on the offside to get it to OT, the drama is unbelievable, and swings in momentum, and good on the Flyers for basically ending the momentum that the Islanders were building by coming back and clawing their way back. You know, you kind of expect New York to take it after what they were able to do to get it to OT. It's incredible. I mean, we witnessed it last night in the game with the Golden Knights and the Canucks and the swings. And it was funny just how timing works. You and I were watching the game, and you go, you know what? It seems like every time Vancouver gets a chance, it's a high-scoring opportunity, and they click like 2 seconds later. It just feels like any one of those moments in these NHL playoffs where you think that all of a sudden there might be a turn and shift 180 degrees in the game. You think that it might happen? It seems to. And that Islanders-Flyers game was exactly the same way, but fortuitous bounce off a stick, and the Flyers still prevail. So I think that series is going to go deep, Greg. So I, you know what, on the outside, as Westerners, we might look at that series and go, all right, it's the Islanders, it's the Flyers. I don't know how many people around here are that interested in it, but I think it's going to be a ground and pound type series where it might go the distance, and those two teams are going to beat the crap out of each other.
Tom Gazzola joins us on the Sports Theater TSN 1260. Tommy, Vancouver and Vegas. Now, Vancouver won the game last night. They got off to a really good start. Vegas really controlled the second period, no question. But what you saw in the first, does it give you a belief that Vancouver maybe could, I think would be an upset, safe to say, or is Vegas just too strong?
Vegas is a deep team. Vegas is a strong team. You have to give the Canucks credit for the counterpunch that they provided last night. But there were times and there were moments in that game, and we were talking up in press level, where I was like, this really reminds me of the Dallas-Colorado game where the Avs were just dominating the first period and really setting the tone and carrying the play, and they should have walked away with the win. But the Stars were opportunistic and were able to capitalize on their power plays, kill off a 5-on-3 that gave them some momentum. And it's kind of the same thing in that Vegas-Vancouver game last night, where it was the second period where you thought, okay, Vegas is going to push back strong. They were down a couple goals. They get the goal from Tuck, and you think that things are going to completely swing in their favor. And sure enough, you said it. You go, I think they're going to, you know, Vancouver gets a chance, and they seem to take advantage when they get those high-scoring opportunities. And Elias Pettersson off a face-off, a couple of nice passes, Edler to Pettersson, but Edler gets a play off of Toffoli, who was great in his return yesterday, and bada-bing, bada-boom, that two-goal lead's reestablished, and Vancouver didn't even look back after that. So I do think that Vegas will prevail. I do think that Vegas could have had that game, and a couple of quick plays here and there completely shifted the score, and in the third period, you know, the Canucks were good in shutting things down, and they were able to build on their lead. But that's a series, Greggs. I honestly do think Vegas will punch back even stronger in Game 3.
You look at Vancouver, maybe the one big positive is Quinn Hughes had a very quiet night last night. That's not, he's a rookie, right? It's, yeah, not, it's not a bad thing at all. But, you know, if they're able to kind of be able to score goals without him, that's a big boost for that team because, you know, early on, you know, so much of it was from Hughes and then obviously Horvat, and I know he scored and Pettersson was really good last night. But you pointed out something that, and once you pointed out, I couldn't take my eyes off it. Elias Pettersson always has two hands on a stick. Like, it's freakish. I've never seen a player, and I texted an NHL guy today, said, who watches all the games. I said, hey, you see Pettersson with two hands on a stick? He's like, what are you talking about? Like, and I'm like, watch him. Like, it's unbelievable to me. He always has two hands and a stick. Like most people, when they're skating through, you know, through the neutral zone waiting for the pass, they'll have one hand off and then they put it on. He's got two hands almost glued to a stick. It's almost uncanny.
It's weird. And, you know, I just wanted to point that out to kind of bounce it off you and see what you thought about that because, you know, you've got a good eye for the game too. And the way I saw it was you look at how Pettersson skates. Obviously, he's effective, great shot. You know, he's nimble. He's not the thickest guy, but he's effective and he finds a way to make goals and offense happen. So I saw him skating and I'm like, he's got a weird stride. But then I'm like, no, it's not his stride. He just always hangs on to his stick, always two hands on his stick. And there's times where you're like, well, wouldn't that be something that would negatively impact the way you play the game, but he finds a way. Like he can catch a pass in awkward positions. He did it yesterday. He did it on that goal, and you know, it almost looks like he's wiggling out there when he's skating, but he has found a way to adapt and at an elite level, and it's actually incredible. And I was trying to pinpoint it. I'm like, I can't think of a guy that plays the game the same way where he's always got two hands glued to his stick. And it's an odd quirk, but it's not a detriment to him. And you know how you're taught, and we're taught at a young age when we're learning how to skate, it's like, hey, you don't want to be pitchforking as you're trying to bust down the ice as hard as you can. You know, try to keep that stick in front of you. Well, this is a Swedish player that's defying that law of hockey, if you will, and law of skating, and he's doing it at the highest level. It's incredible to watch. And then the Quinn Hughes thing, good on the Canucks. I mean, Edler had a strong game yesterday. He's a veteran. He's been around for a long time. They've got Tanev. They've got Stetcher. They've got guys there on that back end, Jordy Benn, where they can pick up a rookie. And we saw in game one, you know, there was a couple of moments and sequences where Quinn Hughes was being keyed on by the Golden Knights. They're being very aggressive on him and right on top of him, and it was affecting his play. And the Canucks showed that they have depth on the blue line where they can make up for it, and you know, their rookie defenseman has been a stud all year, and this is a time where, you know, they can pick him up and say, hey, we got you. You've been great for us all season. We'll take care of you too.
And, Tommy, did you happen to read the article about transporting the puck, moving the puck for defensemen? Is there anything? I don't, because every time we go in, hey, I'm not sure what to expect. Was there anything that stood out for you at all? Any player whose numbers were better or worse than you were expecting?
Well, I mean, that was a great article, Greg's, and that's stuff that kind of makes you open your eyes. And a lot of it, too, I was like, okay, these numbers are indicative of kind of the eye test as well. They back it up a little bit. You're right. You know, you'd like to see Darnell Nurse get closer to that 70% with his outlet passes and his stretch passes, all of that. And I'm sure he's capable of it. It's not something that is insurmountable by any means. But, like, Erik Karlsson being in the high 50s with his outlet passes and his passing ability, Jeff Petrie, another guy you think of that's a good, smooth defenseman that can make a pass, being a lower percentage passer, it's kind of neat to see the breakdown of that. And then the other thing, too, is, like, you always bring it back home and say, okay, well, what do Oilers fans want? Well, they want Darnell Nurse to be better at passing the puck. I get it. I understand that. They want him to defend better. I get that. I understand it. And I was like, okay, if they want him to do that, and Ethan Bear is their best, or I know the two Swedes are their two best outlet passers, but Bear has a high percentage compared to Nurse. What if Nurse just does the old Jason Smith, and when he gets the puck in his own zone, find Ethan Bear so he can make that nice crisp pass out of the zone? And then the other thing, too, is, like, you got to get your forwards picking up those passes as well. But it's nice to do those deep dives. I'm glad you do it because you do it well. But I'm glad you shared that article. And it is kind of interesting to see some of the contrasts in there. And one of the ones that actually caught my eye was Neil Pionk. Okay. You know, that Jacob Trouba trade. Neil Pionk was surprisingly a good pickup in that deal. And he had a good percentage when it came to passing.
Well, you know what? Offensive guy, without question, right? And he was actually up there in a lot of the categories for yeah. D-man moving the puck, so that could be a positive for Winnipeg. And Roman Josi and Thomas Chabot, when it came to carryouts and passouts, like those two are on a completely different level.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, well, we know Chabot's like the golden child on the blue line in Ottawa, and Roman Josi is, I mean, he's... You know, when you can let go of Shea Weber because you know you've got Roman Josi and he continues to carry the weight on that blue line, which is a good blue line with the Nashville Predators, they found themselves a good one. And David Poile has been a tremendous GM in the league. And just more emphasis as to why he's such a good defenseman. So you're right about that, too.
Tommy? Have yourself a wonderful evening. I guess before I let you go, just what do you think is the next step now for the NBA?
Well, that's good question. I mean, I think this is a profound moment again, and a time to reflect. And you know, they're making their statement. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a league-wide statement where the league and the players will come together and they're going to come out and say something publicly together, which will be great. And hopefully that resonates with the public and helps further the movement. But I think the games will resume, you know, and this is something that should be taken note of. And quite frankly, it's going to be one of those marks in history where we're going to look back and read back in books and be like, yeah, I remember that, because a lot of bad stuff was happening in society and down south with our neighbors. And, you know, even, you know, we've reflected here in Canada. But when sports stops to recognize something that's going on in the real world, it really hits home, Greg's. It really does. So I think it'll bring people together, bring the message forward, and then you know, hopefully it really does resonate with the public in general, and then we can, you know, eventually get back to games here. So profound moment. That's, I think, the best way to describe it.
Tommy, have yourself a great night. We'll chat with you tomorrow.
Sounds good, Greg. Thank you very much.